Support for this program comes from Jazz on the Tube, the Internet's largest collection of free streamable classic jazz videos. From Miles Davis to Louis Armstrong, from Thelonious Monk to Duke Ellington, you'll find it all on jazzonthetube.com. Start your free subscription today.
Hi, this is Ken McCarthy of Jazz on the Tube, and welcome to our podcast. Today we're interviewing, and I believe this is the first interview we've done, of a festival producer. And why it took so long to interview a festival producer, I don't know, but here we are. We're doing it. And we're going to talk about a really interesting festival. I mean, everybody knows Montreux and Montreal and New Orleans Jazz Festival, but there are a lot of great festivals, jazz festivals in the world. And if you live in the Northeast, this is one that should be on your radar. And I want to strongly encourage you to listen closely. And even if you don't live in the Northeast, we're going to learn a lot about putting on jazz festivals, and we're going to learn about a particular jazz festival. So welcome, John Ernesto.
Hey, how you doing? How are you? Thank you for inviting me to your podcast.
Well, it's great to have you on. John and I met on the Jazz Cruise. Some of you know that we ran advertising for the Jazz Cruise this year, and we were invited to go on the cruise. And I have to say, it was an amazing experience. I met so many interesting people. It's like a jazz city floating around. There were over 100 musicians. There was music literally all day and night. And this is something that you're able to do, and you love jazz, you should just do it. I had never been on a cruise before. And John is one of the many interesting people I met, and I made a point to get him on the podcast and talk with him about the festival that he produces every year, and also just the whole process of producing a festival, because those of us who enjoy the music, we don't know all that's involved in putting it on. And I think it adds to the appreciation to know some of the people that are making the music happen for us and what they do and how they do it. So, John, the name of the festival that you operate is called Burke's Jazz Fest. Is that correct?
Yeah, Burke's Jazz Fest in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is located about 50 miles northwest of Philadelphia. We're in our 28th year. It's a 10-day festival. It starts April the 6th and runs through April the 15th. We produce and present over 50 major shows, ticketed events. Plus, there's another 100 free concerts in the community at restaurants, clubs, community centers, churches that go on during the 10 days. So it's become a big community event and something that we're all proud of. It's presented by the Burke's Arts Council, which is a nonprofit arts group in town. And the fact that we survived 28 years is pretty amazing. So that's a testament to our community that stand behind us and help us make this happen every year.
Yeah, and anything that survives 28 years is amazing. And you're going strong, too. There's many, many more years to come. So basically, jazz takes over this corner of Pennsylvania for 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah,
which Reading is really
becomes the jazz center of Pennsylvania that day. I mean, those 10 days.
That's great. Well, maybe even the jazz center of the world. No need to understate it, you know. I love the idea of, like, for instance, that ship that we were on was just taken over by jazz. You know, the whole ship
exactly.
is devoted to
jazz.
Exactly. And so here's this corner of Pennsylvania completely taken over by jazz. I think this is a good trend, you know. So tell us about this area. I think I passed through Reading. That's how you pronounce it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Reading, Pennsylvania, yes.
And
home
that is
the Reading Railroad. It's where Reading Railroad's for your listeners who have played Monopoly in their lifetime, that's where Reading Railroad started.
Ah, great, great. And it's close enough to Philadelphia to be close to Philadelphia, but it's suburban rural?
Yeah, it's Burke's name is we live in an area called Burke's County, and Reading is the center of Burke's County, but the festival was spread out through the county. There's about 400,000 people who live in the county and in various communities. Pennsylvania is broke up into 76 counties. You know why? I don't know, but they, it is. We're called Berks County. That's where the Berks come from.
So Berks is the actual name of the county?
Yes, yes, yes. B-E-R-K-S, Berks County, yes.
So for fans out there, can you talk about – let's talk about the upcoming festival, by the way, which is
– It's April 6th through the 15th. Starts Friday, April the 6th.
And you got
– April 15th, yes.
And you got lots and lots of great musicians. Who are some of the headliners that people will recognize instantly?
Well, what we try to do with our festival, we try to make it very diverse, a mixture of contemporary jazz, straight-ahead jazz, blues, gospel. To do a 10-day festival, you can't just focus on one genre of the music. You really got to present an overview of it, and that formula has worked for us. So on the contemporary side, we have, you know, people like Brian Culberson, Boney James, the Rippingtons, Pieces of a Dream, and bands like that. And on the straight ahead side, we have, you know, John Petrelli and Catherine Russell doing Billie Holiday and Frank Sinatra. We have Dave Stryker, Bob Minzer, Organ Quintet coming. Randy Brecker's coming for 5 days to do different programs. And we have Lisa Fisher and Grant Baton. So there's something for everybody. We have probably 6 major blues shows going on. And soul blues, too, like with Billy Price Band and the legendary singer Johnny Rawls. Then we have a big gospel show. Kirk Whalum does gospel according to jazz. We close the festival each year with that. And so we bring in gospel guests. This year we have Jonathan Butler. Wycliffe Gordon is going to be there, as well as Mesa. Plus we have a gospel choir from Reading to participate. So it's a really great way to end the festival. And so we kind of really try to offer people a real diverse schedule of music so that there's something for everyone. And we bring in diverse fans with different tastes. And hopefully they'll try something maybe they didn't come to see, and a style of music that they're not familiar with. And that happens. So we've made a lot of different – we turn fans into straight-ahead fans into contemporary fans into straight-ahead fans. And one of the things we're proud of with the festival – is each Wednesday we do a show called Berks Pop. It started with Chuck Loeb and I came up with an idea about 7-8 years ago, because that was when everybody was, you know, tagging the genres of music, smooth jazz, contemporary jazz, straight ahead. These guys can't play, they're straight ahead guys, I mean, they're contemporary guys, which isn't true. And so we created this Berks Pop sessions with all the contemporary guys like Rick Braun, Gerald Albright, Eric Marienthal, Jeff Lorber, other contemporary artists, and we played nothing but bop that night. And it's become a real staple of the festival. People love it. And the artists actually love it, but they don't get a chance to do it when they're touring with their own bands and you know, on the contemporary jazz scene. But here they get to do it. In fact, Jeff Lorber and Chuck Loeb, we did a bop record based on the Berks Pop thing a couple years ago. So that's what kind of makes our festival exciting, and it makes it exciting to program it, and we present things that fans won't see anywhere else than they have except at the Berks Jazz Fest.
Wow, this is really interesting. So you're going in a different direction than some of the big jazz festivals. For example, it's become popular to, you know, hire huge, you know, I'm just throwing out a name, Bruce Springsteen like that. And I kind of understand. Names. What's that? Go ahead.
Yeah, the big pop names, you know, like Sting and you know, like Springsteen, they'll play New Orleans or something like that. Yeah.
And I kind of understand that from a business point of view. I mean, those are marquee names. They will draw a crowd. The crowd generates more money. But I have to say, it dilutes, to me, this is my opinion, it kind of dilutes the purpose of a jazz festival. And you're going in the other direction. You're actually looking out to create opportunities for the music to flower in all kinds of different unexpected ways. I particularly love this idea of including gospel in the festival. That was done, by the way, on the Jazz Cruise. That's probably going to come up a lot in our conversation. And you know, there is not that much of a wall between jazz and gospel music, and many, many, many jazz musicians, many, I mean, you know, I would say a significant majority got their first start in music playing in the church.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the jazz is, man, you know, where it's all stuff started, but jazz has its roots in gospel music. Gospel has its roots in jazz. I mean, absolutely. And Kirk Whalum, he created a project several years ago called Gospel According to Jazz. He's produced 4 records doing it. And we did this when he first started doing smaller churches at the festival. But about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, Kirk and I were talking. I said, I need something to end the festival. It's a 10-day festival. You know, by that time in the end of the weekend, keeping people in town is a little challenging. So we wanted to come up with something unique. And so we started doing the Gospel According to Jazz celebration with Kirk and his band with a major gospel. I mean, last year we had Fred Hammonds. We've had Donnie McClurkin. We had Yolanda Adams. We had, who else was out? We were supposed to have Take 6 one year. But, you know, it kind of like puts the jazz and the gospel world together, and it brings out a different audience, you know, maybe gospel fans who would next year wouldn't come to the jazz festival. So it's become the finale for the festival has become very popular. So, everybody in the gospel world endorses it, and obviously the jazz world endorses it. So, you know, like you said, you saw the Wycliffe gospel show on the jazz cruise. I mean, he does an amazing job with that. And people really enjoy it. And they really enjoy that 60 minutes of gospel music in the midst of the cruise.
It was stunning. I mean, it was, I think it's essential. I know that the New Orleans Jazz Fest, to their credit, I think they have a gospel tent. And it's just the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, you got to present different styles of music. I mean, it's like even what we're doing, we always try to put unique ensembles together. Something. So this year, again, Kirk Whalum, we're doing a show called The Heart and Soul of Sax. So it's Kirk Whalum and Everett Harp, but we got Maceo Parker and Dee Dee Bridgewater to be special guests, plus a horn section called the Burke's Horn.
Wow.
And it's going to be very Memphis-oriented, soul, jazz, I'm excited about that. You know, you just don't get a chance to put those kind of people together on a show. But, you know, we work at it, and, you know, and then the management of the artists, who we have gained a lot of respect for each other over the years, trust us to do the right thing. So, and you have a guy like Kirk producing it, so it's a natural thing. And Kirk happened to produce Dee Dee Bridgewater's new Memphis-themed record, so there was a connection there, so... So it's fun, you know, putting this stuff together makes it fun for me.
And I'm sure for the audience too. And one of the things you mentioned earlier, and maybe we'll focus on this for a bit, is in a typical jazz festival, just the way it works, musicians fly in and they fly out. You know, they do their act and they go, because, you know, it's business. They have to, you know, they have got things to tend to. But you created sort of an environment where the musicians sort of hang out a little bit, they mix and match, they get involved in projects and in performances that maybe otherwise they wouldn't have an opportunity to do. So they're actually having some fun as well. It's not just another gig.
Oh, absolutely. The artists love it. I mean, several of them come every year because they're into hanging and doing different projects and mixing and matching, like the Burke's Bop guys. And on Thursday night, we do this big jam session. It's called the Burke's All-Star Jam, which is really a controlled jam, but it's a produced jam. And they do that show. Then they do the Bop show. They do some kind of spin-off of their own show. And it's like Eric Marienfeld's coming to the festival this year on Friday the 6th, and he's not leaving until Thursday the 12th. But actually, for Friday the 13th, after performing on the 12th. So he has shows interspersed throughout all that time. I mean, he's doing a Cannonball Adderley show in a club. He's in Burke's Bop. He's in the All-Star Jam. He's doing educational stuff. So he's playing with the special effects all-stars. So there's a lot going on all week long. So they enjoy the fact that God sounds, like you said, they fly in, do the show, jump on a plane, go home, or to the next spot. Here they come in, they can hang out and have some fun. So,
and, you know, musicians should have fun, too.
Absolutely, know, absolutely.
You talked about education. Can you tell us a little about the educational programs that are part of the festival?
Yes, we do. We have an education committee. We branded it Get Jazz, J-A-Z-Z, capital E-D, and it's made up of local musicians who are local teachers, or some are retired now, but we have a year-long program where they do Get Jazz jams in schools or with music programs. And for the Jazz Festival, years ago, we created the Berks High School All-Star Jazz Band, where kids get to try out to be in the All-Star Jazz Band, which performs two or three times during the festival. We do a big Jazz Education Day in January for instrumentals. We just did a Get Jazz Day for vocals. And during the festival, we have day-long workshop education on Sunday, April the 8th. And that evening, we're doing a Berks Jazz High School Big Band Festival, where the high school bands are coming in to participate in a festival where they'll be critiqued and, you know, be a winner and all that. So we're always trying to do stuff where kids, well, actually on Monday, on the 9th this year, we do the Get Jazz Jam in a bigger version at a main venue for kids from all over the county to come, and adults if they want to participate. And we have Randy Brecker, Eric Marienthal, Gerald Veasley, Albert Rivera, working with the kids with a professional rhythm section, so the kids get to play with a professional rhythm section and also have the support help from all these major artists. So it's kind of a cool night, and it's part of our mission to keep education a big part of the festival.
That's great. That's so important, because that's where the next generation of musicians is going to come from. And it's got to be transformative for these young musicians to get to work directly with, you know, the Randy Breckers of the world. I mean, that would just be a mind-boggling experience.
Well, the cool thing is we've been doing it so long. Now kids who went through the program are now coming back either performing or doing educational stuff with us. And that's, you know, it's kind of, I really think that's pretty cool. Also shows we're all getting older, too. But that, you know, the kids are coming back. The kids who went through the program are now coming back and giving back to the younger kids.
You know, I don't mind getting older as long as I see jazz continuing.
Yeah.
You know? You know? And it really is, and I'm not trying to butter you up, but I have to just say this, it is thanks to people like you that jazz does continue. Because the idea that, you know, geniuses are just going to appear out of the blue full-blown is preposterous. It never happened. It's a great musician is always the product of a community and is always the product of people who care about the kids and about the music. And these things don't fall off a tree. They have to be crafted, the opportunities, that is. And it's so great that your festival is integrating education into everything. Now, you told me the story of how you got involved. You know, you were not born a jazz festival producer, and you didn't go to college. You didn't get a major in jazz festival production. How did you find yourself?
I always liked music, but when the festival started, I was the marketing director for the Reading Eagle Company, the local newspaper. And when the festival started, I knew some of the people who were putting it together, and they asked me to get involved to help put a marketing plan together and just, you know, get the newspaper support of it, so which we did. And so first one was in 1991. It was 2.5 days, and we had Wynton Marsalis there, and nothing like starting off like that, looking back on it 28 years later. In the second year, there were some problems within the Arts Council and management. So the second one, the executive director of the Arts Council had left the organization. So a group of us got together and just did what we had to do to make the second one happen. And then the third year, I was asked to be like co-chairman of it. And then the fourth year, the gentleman who was brought in to be the chairman just did it to kind of stabilize after the transition. And he didn't want to do it anymore, so they asked me if I would want to run it. And I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. You know, I had never booked a band. You know, I knew some things, but not a lot of things. But I said, I'll give it a shot. So, you know, I put my, roll up my sleeves and got to work and started to learn about the business and making contacts and started going from there. And I just told them, I said, you know, once you know, we got to get through the 6th and 7th years. Those are those critical years when something makes it or doesn't make it. And so we did. Then we got to the 10th year. We came up with the idea of doing 10-day festival to celebrate the 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And with the idea of going back to the long weekend. Well, everybody loved it so much. The hotel group loved it. The fans loved it. So we never turned back. We've been 10 days since our 10th anniversary. So, you know, 18 years now, we've been a 10-day festival. So I've learned an awful lot in 28 years. Been very fortunate, had some good people to help me, some agents and stuff. And we have a great community of volunteers. I mean, the Berks Arts Council is, I don't work for the Berks Arts Council. I'm just an advisor or whatever, you know. And I've been, my task is to run the jazz festival for them. But we have a great group of volunteers. We have almost 300 volunteers that work on the festival.
Wow.
Help make it happen, you know, stage hands, manage stage producers, front of house volunteers, usher, transportation people, hospitality people. So there's a real family of people who make this happen. And so that's very gratifying. And it's created, I mean, I've made so many new friends and lifelong friends now through this that it's pretty amazing. And then the relationship with the artists have grown now. And some, you know, are my friends, and so many of them like working with us, so they come to us with ideas. So it's been an amazing journey. Well, you know, I feel very fortunate and blessed that we managed to pull all this off. Some days I ask myself, wow, how did we do this? My wife and I look at each other and say, this is pretty cool. So, but now we're getting up there in 28 years, so I want to make sure we get to 30, have that milestone. But you take it one day at a time, so, and stay focused on doing a good job. And it's a challenge today because of the changes in the record industry, the changes in the radio. I mean, those were natural partners when we were doing this in the heyday, the beginning. You know, all that's gone away. So now there's obviously folks like you who, in Jazz on the Tube, are keeping the music alive in front of people. Fans have access. They have access to more information and more knowledge about this stuff, but you don't have that big record promotion behind a record and all that kind of stuff, you know. But it's evolving. So as promoters, we have to evolve and find new ways, like social media and organizations like yourself, to partner up with to keep the word out there, not only about jazz, but about our festivals and how to reach out and find stuff. So, but it's, you know, things change. It's an evolution.
Yeah.
I'm sure years ago you never thought you would be doing Jazz on the Tube, you know?
So. Oh, no. I tell people this story, and it bears repeating. When I wanted to see a classic jazz video, I had to get on the train. Well, you'll appreciate this. I was living around Princeton, New Jersey. I'd have to get on the train, take, I think it was about an hour and a half, however long it took, to get to New York City to go to the Museum of Broadcasting when it was open, and it was a new thing in those days, and go to the library and request a video. You know? That's what people had to go through. If you wanted to see Lester Young perform with Billie Holiday, that was the only way it was going to happen. And so, to me, this is it's easy to forget, but this is sort of on the one hand, it has been very disruptive. I mean, we've lost the record labels, a lot. But on the other hand, it's opened the door to a new kind of distribution. And you know, it's another interesting thing that was occurring to me as you were describing all the volunteers and all the local support is, I don't know that this kind of community support on this level ever existed before. And you know, in other words, festivals were sort of they were businesses, and they were operated strictly as businesses, and it sounds like your entire community looks forward to this festival every year, whether they're super jazz fans or not, and they enjoy the influx of new people and the activity and the opportunities that it creates for restaurants and hotels. And I see this happening all over the country, that communities are discovering that the jazz audience is a really good audience to attract to their hometowns.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. They're not going to get drunk.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I get asked a lot of times from people, I know a lot of people in Philly, and they say, why can't we do this in Philly? Because Philly doesn't even have a major jazz festival anymore. They come and they go. So you don't have that tight community. I mean, the hotels, you know, they're in it for money, you know, and they don't want to do what you have to do to make it really work so you have some continuity. And then you have venues, and they have their own series. But in our community, you know, we have competition in our community. There's, you know, we have a major venue, an arena. We have a major theater that's run by the people who run the arena, and they bring a lot of acts in door to day. We're an hour from Philly. We're in the area of Allentown, which is 40 minutes up the road. And they got an arena now, and they do a lot of shows. So there's a lot of competition for mm-hmm. fans to spend money. But we manage to find our niche, and we stay focused on it, and we communicate with our fans all the time. And so, you know, so far, you know, the people have stood with us. And I think what people like about coming to our festival, it's like a family atmosphere. Everybody knows each other. It's kind of like the cruise. You know, there's a lot of people on the cruise every year. So I've been doing it, fortunately, been doing that cruise for 8 or 10 years, and I see people all the time. We're on it every year, and you become friends, and it's kind of like a little bit of a reunion. Well, it's that way with our festival. People come every year, and they faithfully show up, and they have a good time, and I think that's important. You got to have that sense of community to make it work these days.
And where do people stay when they come, if they're coming from out of town?
Well, there's a bunch of hotels here. We have 10 hotel partners who work with us. We market their hotels to the fans, and they provide us with support, which are housing some artists. And so it's a real win-win. Everybody wins, you know. You know, one of the things I really stress to everybody as we move forward with this year after year, is we can never allow greed to get into the bloodstream of this festival. I said we can never allow that, but that would be the end of it. You know, if the hotels decide that, well, we don't want to support you at this level, or I mean, then the house of cards starts falling down, because there's a lot of moving parts to this, and everybody got to be running in the same gear. So we managed to keep greed out of the festival. So that's a credit to everybody who works with us.
Wow. And you know, it's so even more amazing, because when you started this, as you said, you had never booked a band. I'm going to assume you'd never rented audio equipment. You know, so the whole business was, you couldn't have known less about the mechanics of putting on jazz performance, or let alone a festival.
I worked in the newspaper industry for almost 50 years, and I had various management positions there. But one thing I learned from the very beginning, someone told me, always surround yourself with good people. And I've always maintained, you know, I try to surround myself with people who were smarter than me, knew more than me, and they were good team players, and just tap that potential and empower them. And we did that we built the festivals that way too. We have a great production guys, we have a great transportation team, people in hospitality. They all come from all walks of life, but they're all good at what they do, and they, you know, you don't have to babysit and micromanage it. So I've always, you know, always try to make sure you surround yourself with good people. Not about one individual, it's about a group of people. So,
well, that's great advice for anybody who wants to do anything in the arts. And since we've got you and we're getting good advice from you, I'm going to ask for some more. So let's say somebody's listening and maybe they're not ready to put on a festival, but maybe they just want to start and bring, you know, a group that they love or an artist they love to their hometown. What kind of, and since you're on, and it, we both know at the end of the day, there are a lot of moving parts, but the fuel is marketing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you had that experience with the newspaper, and I'm sure that was priceless experience when it came to putting these festivals together. What kind of advice can you give somebody who wants to be a jazz activist and start bringing jazz to their local community? We've heard one thing, which is find the smartest people you can in all the different disciplines and work with them. I'll throw out another one, maybe you could expand on. It sounds like you went out and found all the logical, natural partners, like the hotels.
Right.
Like
a venue. Get the right venue. I mean, there's the simple business thing behind it is, okay, you want to bring in an artist. Okay, you got to figure out, find out what that costs. You make sure you have a venue. Or, first of all, you start out with a venue, then you say, okay, now who can we afford to bring in here? We have X amount of seats, and if we charge X for a ticket, how do we pay the bills? Then you figure out your production costs, and how do you find partners who can help keep your costs down, like a marketing partner, a hotel partner, a hospitality partner, so that you can start putting a business plan together that makes sense. And, of course, the marketing, the marketing is critical because the days, I always use the phrase, the days of build it and they will come are over. People have so many choices today to do stuff. You got to really reach out to your niche audience and really market that niche audience. And that's the way we do even the jazz festival, as big as it is, it's a niche audience. So you got to spend your marketing dollars very wisely because you got to talk to the people who are going to listen. And that's why, like you and I are talking right now, creating a partnership with Jazz on the Tube, we're talking to the same audience. Talking to somebody who's like putting an ad in a newspaper today is okay, but how many of those subscribers care about jazz? How many of them read the ad? So it's kind of like an inverted pyramid where it gets less and less and less and less and less, as you work your way down. So then it becomes value for your purchase, the amount of dollars you spend on your marketing. Yeah, it's just a matter of, come up with the right business plan, create good partnerships, and be realistic who you can afford and what your audience will bear for tickets. And then when you start programming, the trick for programming bands is, sometimes, you can't afford a band on a Saturday night, but if they're on the road and they need a Thursday night, you can buy them at maybe half the price. So there's a lot of that to learn, too, where the economies of scale are,
That's some really, really good advice, that last piece. I mean, business is all about money in and money out, ultimately. So one of the things you said, which is so important, and I hope people heard it, but if not, let me repeat. Certain ad buys, for instance, buying an ad in a generic newspaper, probably will not do much for you because it's not very well targeted. So don't do that. Yeah. It's expensive. If you're a bank and you've got a home loan program, that may make sense. But if you're a jazz festival, in that case, the way to work with the newspaper would be through traditional PR, seeing if you can interest the newspaper in covering it.
Do a feature story on the ad. There's some information on the show.
Yeah, that you might be able to work with them that way. I think the other thing that you mentioned is so important is find your natural allies. Who cares if jazz comes to town? Obviously, the jazz fans do, but the hotel owners, the restaurant owners, and jazz fans are good fans. They're not going to be setting cars on fire and starting drunken brawls during the festival. It's not that kind of a crowd. So I think it's an attractive crowd from a hospitality point of view for some.
Exactly. We get so many people who, some people come in and want to support us. The simple philosophy I always use is it a win-win partnership? I live by that with everything I do. If I come to you and say, how can we partner? So how can I make you win? How can you make me win? And that's what we do at Jazz Fest. We have hotel partners, so we do we go above and beyond what they ask of us, what we can do within our framework. And it's just so if they win, then we win. So if they're happy, we're happy. So, like I said, you can't get greedy and say, well, I'm going to try to get two for one and all that. You got to just keep everything in perspective and make sure everybody wins.
And so, so a big
tough,
part
it's
of
a tough business. It's a tough business. So to do, especially today, starting out because of all the issues with natural promotions not out there, natural awareness is not out there. Unless you're booking Bruno Mars or something like that, you know. But,
right, and that's probably why some festivals have gone in that direction. They're saying, "Oh, the heck with it," you know. But I way prefer this. I'm going to call it a community based approach to jazz festivals. You're not depending on some mega superstar to make the train run.
You're building a
network, community network of all the people who would benefit from having a successful festival in your town. So I guess big lesson number one is don't go it alone. If you aspire to put on a show or maybe do a weekend or, you know, do a small festival, probably the very first thing is to start brainstorming as to, okay, who else would care? Who
right.
else would benefit? And
right.
and I imagine the way to reach them is reaching out. You don't just send them an email. You call them up, I'm assuming, and you meet with them when possible.
Absolutely, yeah. You brainstorm, sit down, and see what's in it for everybody. Here's what we want to do. How can you fit into this? And how can you help? And a lot of people are interested in bringing something to the community and are willing to invest their time and dollars, their business time and their business dollars into it just so the community wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're – a lot of people support us. A lot of companies support us. And it's really not much of a return for them, but from a philanthropic standpoint of helping the community, they're all in because they want to see the community survive. I mean, we impact our community with about $8 to $10 million economic impact. So they see the value of that. So they want to make sure our community continues to win overall, and so they stay on board with us.
So this takes it beyond. So that's probably the if we think of a target, you know, a bullseye kind of target. The bullseye are the jazz fans, the diehard jazz fans. You know, they're obviously going to want to.
I'm sorry.
Beyond that are people in the hospitality industry. Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead. Yeah, we
okay,
broke
great.
Up here.
So, okay, we're having an ice storm here, and anything can happen. I'm amazed we got this call through. I'm very pleased. So the center of the bullseye are the jazz, the hardcore jazz fans. They're going to be your audience, and they're going to be, you know, and every jazz fan has his own network, his or her own network of family members
right.
who they can
yeah.
spread the word to. The next ring of the bullseye, I imagine, is the hospitality industry. They want to
have people in bed
restaurants.
Yeah,
and then the next ring, which it hadn't really occurred to me until you mentioned it, is anybody who cares about the community and wants to see it thrive. Now that opens things up tremendously. So maybe I own a tool and die company, and I'm not particularly a jazz fan, but I love my town and I care about my employees who live in town. And I want to make my town better. And along comes John and the Berks Jazz Fest, and they're doing these great things. And maybe I can ship something in to help make it happen.
Exactly.
This is great stuff because it's creating an opportunity for musicians to work, which is important, for fans to hear live music, for kids to be exposed to it, but it's also strengthening the local community. So this is a great model, and I think it's kind of a new-ish model. I don't think this is how jazz was perceived 40 years ago, 50 years ago. It was more of a jazz industry, and
mm-hmm.
you know, venues and promoters and agents would get together and they'd do stuff. But now, because of the changing world that we're in, we're kind of forced to be smarter and to enroll more people in it. And I think this is a really good long-term trend and a great model for people to follow. There was another practical hint that you gave out, which I want to repeat, is you musicians are professionals and they need to make a living. I mean, you know, obviously. But like all professionals, sometimes they can be flexible if circumstances are right. You know, so for instance, if I'm a mining engineer and some big company has brought me to Zimbabwe or something, and then there's it's a local mine in Zimbabwe that wants to hire me, well, gee, I'm already in Zimbabwe. I can work for less than my normal fee.
Exactly.
It's not insulting. It's not degrading to offer less. It's just business, you know. And
absolutely,
you know,
yeah. We hire bands all the time. You know, the agent would say, I got a big offer for Saturday night, and we're trying to fill dates around it. So they know exactly how much money. If they're going to be out, say, 5 days, they know exactly how much money they need to cover in those 5 days. The artist pays, the side guy's getting paid, the travel, you know, all that stuff. So if you get a big offer on a Saturday, it covers a fair amount of that five-day nut. So now they want to bring in the four of the days. So if you're like a Thursday night, well, you're going to get a great deal because they want to fill that Thursday because then they got hotels and they're making money. They sell CDs. So they help cover that nut. So that's how the business operates. So if someone's paying $20,000 on Saturday, you may get that same show for $10,000 on a Thursday. So
there you go. And it's a win for the band because otherwise they'd be just sitting there.
Yeah, I mean they can't afford to have an ensemble sitting in on the road with no place to stay and making no money that day.
Yeah, so if you see an announcement of somebody playing in your region who you like and you'd like to have them come to your town, don't be shy. If they've got a gap, and you can see it when they publish a lot of groups publish their tours on the internet, and you can see when somebody's got like 3 empty days, and if they're in your neighborhood, for them to add an extra show either before or after, that's a blessing to them, and they're going to be able to be flexible on price. Now, let's talk about this other thing that you kind of have alluded to, but we should make it concrete. You also work very hard to make sure that the Berks Jazz Fest is a great experience for the musicians. It's not just another gig.
Oh yeah. We have our philosophy, all our volunteers, and we're having volunteer meetings this week, is with everybody. Our simple philosophy is, you know, take care of the fans, take care of the musicians, and everything else will take care of itself. So we bend over backwards to make sure musicians are treated, taken care of, making sure they're picked up on time, they got good housing, good hospitality, and that means the world of difference. Because we get a lot of kudos from the artists and management because how their artists are treated here. Because they have some horror stories out there where they didn't get picked up, where, you know, things weren't, the production wasn't what they were expecting, you know, just a lot of things. And so we really make that a priority. Fans, the musicians and the artists, take care of them and everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah, we can barely imagine what a traveling musician has to deal with. Those of us that have had to travel for business extensively know that it's the glamour wears off really fast.
Well, the musicians always say, you know, playing, they get paid to travel, they play for free.
Interesting.
Fun.
John and I are talking by phone, and so it's hard. We can't see each other. So, John, I apologize for stepping on you all the time.
That's all right. That's okay.
Yeah. And also this is a little trick that I'll share with people. Pay attention to who lives in your area. I live in the Mid-Hudson Valley, and I once saw a show with Jack DeJohnette and Pat Metheny playing to about 100 people in the most intimate circumstances you can imagine. It was just a little hall. Why did they do it? Because they could get in their car and drive to the gig. And number two, it was a community cause. It was something to benefit the community, and they wanted to support it. And I think you'll find, it's not true in every case, but very much so, you're going to find that musicians, jazz musicians in particular, are very generous. I mean, don't take advantage of that generosity. But if there is somebody local and there is a cause that truly benefits the community or a sector of the community, you'd be surprised who'll come out and help. That's just,
absolutely. Some of the musicians that we deal with are some of the greatest people, the nicest people I've ever met and worked with. So, I mean, they're very appreciative. when you create a good relationship with them, they'll bend over backwards for you. They'll jump through hoops for you.
And creating that relationship is a number of things, and some of them are very simple. Like you pointed out, being picked up on time and not having to hassle that transfer from the airport to the hotel, mm-hmm. being treated nicely in the hotel. I mean, they're not expecting the Taj Mahal, but, you know, it's just nice if things are smooth. You know, their room's
right,
ready.
Exactly.
You know, because they may have just gotten off a 10-hour flight.
Right.
You know, and the last thing anybody wants to deal with is static. So there's a lot of it is not at all brain surgery, and yet the impact of it. I'll give you an example. This is a true story. A very well-known musician, you would know his name instantly, was playing a benefit, and he had just literally gotten off a 15-hour flight from China to be part of this benefit, and he went out and played his heart out, and he couldn't get a drink of water. You know, and I wasn't responsible. I was just there as a videographer running this videography team. But I saw what was going on, and I went out and I made sure I got him bottles of water so that at least he could have water. And that was extremely meaningful to him. So that, you know, it can be very, very simple things. So if I were So if I were to sum this up, your wisdom of growing the Berks Jazz Fest and keeping it on track. Big part of this is community building. It's not a one-man band. You really have to involve lots and lots of people. Be dedicated to the music itself, not the money. Make sure it's a great experience for the musicians and the fans. And if you take care of the musicians, you're going to be taking care of the fans too, because they're going to just be in a better state to perform. And it's tough on our musicians, and we as fans, sometimes we're not aware. But I think what you said, that they get paid to travel, but they play for free, I think is absolutely true. The travel part is really tough. So if you can create a great experience for the musicians, and musicians talk. If they've had a bad experience, they will certainly let people know. If they've had a good experience, they'll let their fellow musicians know. So if you develop a reputation as a fair dealer and a place where they're going to be treated well and even have a bit of fun, suddenly you're in a totally different category. So let's talk about the Berks Fest. So the date again this year in 2018?
It's April 6th through the 15th in Reading, Pennsylvania. And it's 10 days, and our festival is different than, you know, if people hear festival, I think maybe of an area where there's one or two stages. All our main ticketed shows are all in different venues, and they're all shows unto themselves. And the venues range from a 1,700-seat performing arts center to a 1,200-seat performing arts center to a 1,000-seat ballroom at the Doubletree that we turned into a really nice theater. We have a 500-seat performing arts center, and we have clubs and restaurants. So it's all of the whole gamut. Our ticket events are started in a 130-seat club and go up to a 1,700-seat performing arts center. So it's, you know, every show is an individual show, so you get a full 90-minute show, and it's just that artist. Sometimes there's an opening act or a co-bill, but that, you know, and they're spaced out. So if you go to one at 7 o'clock, then there's a 10 o'clock show. And, of course, we have our Midnight Jam hosted by Gerald Beasley. So it's something. The weekends are pretty full packed. If you just go to Berks Jazz Fest, have everyone just check out BerksJazzFest.com, B-E-R-K-S, JazzFest.com. All the information's there for the festival.
Great. And Berks is B-E-R-K-S?
Yes.
Jazz?
B-E-R-K-S, yes. Yeah.
B-E-R-K-S?
BerksJazzFest.com.
And there's plenty of places to stay, and I imagine lots of great places to eat.
Yeah, there's tons of restaurants. And everybody's welcoming the jazz fans. They got welcome jazz fans in their windows and other establishments. And all the hotels are listed on the website, where to stay, all the schedule, how to get tickets, information, all the artists about the shows. There's interviews. We have video. We have a lot of stuff on our website. So you can learn as much as you want about the Berks Jazz Fest.
Great. So if you're a Jazz Fest fan, this is definitely a fest to put on your schedule.
Yep.
And if you've never gone to what I'll call an immersive jazz experience, like a jazz cruise or a jazz fest, this is also something that you really, if you love jazz and you've never done that, you're really missing out on something. It's like I said, it's like going to a jazz city, and the whole city's, you know, taken over by jazz for a couple of
days.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, yeah.
It's a great thing, and you'll see how alive jazz really is, and how many fans it does have. And it's a very warming thing, and of course you get to hear a lot of great music too. And of course live, you got to go out live. You know, we only put the videos up to whet your appetite to go out and hear live music. At the end of the day, it's all about going out and hearing it live.
Yeah.
You're a huge supporter. If you want to support jazz and keep jazz alive, go out and hear it perform live, and also buy the CDs at the end of the show. That's a big help too. But this is an art that needs the live audience. The audience is a really important part of the creative process. And you may think, well, I'm not, what am I doing? I'm just sitting there. Well, if you're sitting there and listening, you're adding something to the mix that's very important.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I always tell audiences when we do shows, I don't MC any of our shows, but we always tell audiences, we thank them for supporting live music, because I always say, without the audience, there is no live music. And that would be a sad day for everybody, because live music is so much different than listening to it on a CD. It's just, you know, because the artists are, you know, they're just totally more free on the stage. So,
and they respond when they have a good audience. It makes a huge difference.
Big time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so great. Everybody, definitely, you know, put this, you go to the website, number one, and that's Berks. BERKS jazzfest.com. Millions and millions of people live within a drive of this area. If you're in Pennsylvania, if you're in Jersey, you know, it's just a lot of people living around there. I live about 100 miles north of New York City, so it's another, I'm going to guess, 100 miles to get here.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I'm intrigued, and I may well be there myself this year. So, John, thank you so much for sharing with us. And stay on the line after we finish the interview. I'd like to talk with you just for a minute.
Okay.
But we've been talking to John Ernesto of the Berks Jazz Fest. It happens every year in the spring, this year in April. Check them out at berksjazzfest.com. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please share it. That's how we grow. And remember to subscribe to jazzonthetube.com, the internet's largest collection of free, streamable, classic jazz videos.